Welcome back, Hemingway listeners, to the Hemingway List. We are here today gathered on this earth to talk about Anna Karenina, Part 7, Chapter 20. Have you ever noticed that you feel so dramatically different from one city to the next? And also, enter Landau, the clairvoyant. I am Norwegian, said it's been a while, but Tolstoy is really hammering in the difference between Moscow and St. Petersburg here. Petersburg is progressive. Parents live for themselves, not their children. Men can have two families. The kind of exuberant lifestyles that Stepan loves is celebrated. Even if you have to drown yourself in debt to attain it, you can lust after young girls, keep a few mistresses while laughing about it with your circle of equally progressive buddies. None of this flies in Moscow, though. Question 1. I just moved from the north to a city double the size in southeastern Norway. And honestly, not really. Not any different. I noticed the lack of snow and that the fact that my dialect is finally the same as everyone else's. Maybe I'm just too much of a loner presently to notice any cultural differences. Oslo was different. The giant buildings everywhere, the nightlife. Even the women looked more beautiful. Question 2. I feel like the clairvoyance or spiritualism was brought up early in the book also. Apparently it was a huge thing in St. Petersburg. I wonder what Tolstoy thought about it. Corolette says, no, I haven't noticed feeling so different between cities. I can definitely notice cultural differences between West Coast and East Coast, but it doesn't affect me as much as Oblonsky is affected here. The story about Lando just popping up and giving everyone strange medical advice is pretty surreal. On the other hand, Maya Kaya seemed like she might be going for entertainment over accuracy. I wonder if the story is exaggerated. Swim said, the mama fishy said, oh, absolutely, I notice the difference. I personally am affected by my surroundings. Some locales I have just wanted to flee, I've disliked them so much, and others I've just been ready to move right in and make a life. I notice a pretty big difference from place to place. I mean, especially when you go somewhere extreme, like I grew up in the mountains in Victoria, Australia, and for a little while I went and lived in Tokyo, and people... I mean, the place is so different, but the people are so different too. Right down to like the core, like our... It's not just logistically they do things different in their city, but like culturally. I think I chose the wrong words there, but you know what I mean. I have a frog in my throat. Let's read chapter 21, or attempt to. After an excellent dinner and a large quantity of brandy at the Bartnyski, Oblonsky, only a little after the appointed time, entered the Countess Lydia Ivanovna's house. Who is with the Countess? The Frenchman, Oblonsky asked the hall porter, noticing on the hall stand Karenin's overcoat, which he recognized, and a strange, absurd-looking paletot with clasps. Alexis Alexandrovich Karenin and Count Bezubov, the hall porter replied severely. The Princess Maya-Kaya guessed correctly, thought Oblonsky as he ascended the stairs. Strange, but it would be just as well to make friends with her. She has tremendous influence. If she would say a word to Pomorsky, the job is done. Oh my god. Sorry about that. I was going to read it with half a voice. It was still quite light out of the doors, but in the Countess Lydia Ivanovna's small drawing room, the blinds were down and the lamp alight. At the round table beneath a lamp sat the Countess and Karen conversing in low tones. A short, lean man with hips like a woman's, knock-kneed, very pale, handsome with beautiful shining eyes and long hair that hung over the collar of his frock coat, stood at the opposite end of the room looking at the portraits on the wall. After greeting the hostess and Karen and Oblonsky, involuntarily glanced at the stranger once more. Monsieur Landau, the Countess addressed him with a softness and caution that struck Oblonsky, and she introduced them. Lando hurriedly looked around, approached smilingly, laid upon Oblonsky's outstretched hand his own moist and emotionless one, went back and continued looking at the portraits. The Countess and Karenin glanced at each other significantly. I'm very pleased to see you, especially today, said the Countess Lydia Ivanovna, pointing to a seat beside Karenin. I introduced him to you as Lando, she said softly, glancing at the Frenchman and then back at Oblonsky, but really he is Count Bezubov, as you probably know, but he does not like that title. Yes, I have heard, replied Oblonsky. They say he has completely cured the Countess Bezubov. She called on me today and was so pathetic, said the Countess, turning to Karenin. This separation is dreadful for her. It is such a blow to her. Is he going definitely? Inquired Karenin. Yes, he is going to Paris. He heard a voice yesterday, said the Countess, with a look at Oblonsky. Oh, a voice, Oblonsky remarked, feeling that he must be as careful as possible in this company where something peculiar occurred and was supposed to occur, to which he as yet lacked a clue. After a momentary pause, the Countess Lydia Ivanovna, as if coming to the important point, turned with a subtle smile to Oblonsky. I have known you a long time, and am very pleased to know you more intimately. Les amis de nous, amis sont nos amis. The friends of our friends are our friends. But to be a friend, one must enter into the state of the friend's soul, and I fear you will not do so in relation to Alexis Alexandrovitch. You understand what I am speaking about, she said, lifting her beautiful, dreamy eyes. To some extent, Countess, I understand that Alexis Alexandrovitch's position, said Oblonsky, not quite grasping it, what it was all about, and therefore wishing to keep to generalities. The change is not in his external position, Lydia Ivanovna said severely as her enamoured eyes followed Karenin, who had risen and joined Lando. His heart is changed. He has been given a new heart, and I fear that you may not have realised fully that change which has been accomplished within him. Well, broadly speaking, I can picture to myself the change. We have always been friendly, and now, Oblonsky said, answering her with a tender gaze, while he considered with which of two ministers she was the more closely connected, so as to judge which of them he should ask her to influence on his behalf. The change that has taken place in him cannot weaken his love for his neighbour. On the contrary, that change must strengthen his love. But I fear you don't understand me. Won't you have some tea? Sorry, that was my phone going blip blip, she said, indicating with her eyes the footman who was handing tea around on a tray. Not quite, Countess. Of course, his misfortune. Yes, a misfortune which has turned into a great blessing because his heart became new and is filled with him, she said, glancing at Oblonsky with love-sick eyes. I think I might ask her to mention me to both, thought he. Oh, certainly, Countess, he said. But I think such changes are so very intimate that nobody, not even the closest friend, cares to speak about them. On the contrary, we must speak and so help one another. Yes, of course, but there are such differences of conviction, and besides, said Oblonsky with a gentle smile, there cannot be any differences in what concerns the holy truth. Oh, no, of course not, but, and he became embarrassed, Oblonsky stopped short. He realized that it was a question of religion. It seems to me he will fall asleep directly, said Karenin, in a significant whisper, approaching Lydia Ivanovna. Oblonsky turned. Lando was sitting by the window, leaning against the arm and the back of an easy chair, with his head hanging down. Noticing the looks directed toward him, he smiled a childishly naive smile. Take no notice of him, said Lydia Ivanovna, and with an agile movement, she pushed forward a chair for Karenin. I have noticed, she began, when a footman entered with a note. Lydia Ivanovna rapidly read the note and, excusing herself with extreme rapidity, wrote and dispatched the answer and returned to the table. I have noticed, she continued her interrupted sentence, that Muscovites, men especially, are most indifferent to religion. Oh no, Countess, I think Muscovites have the reputation of being the most steadfast believers, replied Oblonsky. But as far as I know, you unfortunately are one of the indifferent, Karenin remarked to him with a weary smile. How can one be indifferent, said Lydia Ivanovna. I am in this respect not precisely indifferent, but rather expectant, said Oblonsky with his most mollifying smile. I do not think that, for me, the time for those questions has yet come. Karenin and Lydia Ivanovna exchanged looks. We never know whether our time has come or not, Karenin said sternly. We should not consider whether we are ready or not. Grace is not influenced by human calculations. Sometimes it does not descend on those who seek it, but descends on the unprepared, as on Saul. No, not yet, I think, said Lydia Ivanovna, who was watching the Frenchman's movements. Lando rose and came up to them. You will allow me to listen, he asked. Oh, yes, I do not wish to disturb you, said Lydia, looking tenderly at him. Sit down beside us. Only one must not shut one's eyes so as to deprive oneself of light, Karenin continued. Oh, if you only knew the happiness of experience, feeling his continual presence in our souls, cried the Countess Lydia Ivanovna with a beatific smile. But one may sometimes feel incapable of ascending to such heights, remarked Oblonsky, conscious that he was not quite honest in acknowledging the existence of religious heights, yet not venturing to confess his scepticism in the presence of one who, by a single word to Pomorsky, might secure him the desired post. You mean to say he is prevented by sin, said Lydia Ivanovna, but that is a false view. Sin does not exist for a believer. Sin has already been atoned for. Excuse me, she added, glancing at the footman who entered with another note. She read it and answered by word of mouth, tell him tomorrow at the Grand Duchess's. For those who believe there is no sin, she went on. Yes, but faith without works is dead, said Oblonsky, recalling that sentence from the Catechism, and only by a smile maintaining his independence. There it is, from the Epistle of St. James, said Karenin, addressing Lydia Ivanovna in a somewhat reproachful tone. Evidently this was a point they had discussed more than once. How much harm has been done by a false interpretation of that passage? Nothing turns so many from the faith as that interpretation. I have no works, and therefore cannot have faith. Yet it is not so said anywhere, just the contrary is said. To labour for God with works to save one's soul by fasting, said the Countess Lydia Ivanovna with fastidious disdain, those are the barbarous opinions of our monks. Yet it is not so said anywhere, it is much simpler and easier, she added, looking at Oblonsky with the same encouraging smile, with which at court she encouraged young maids of honour who were confused by their new surroundings. We are saved by Christ who suffered for us. We are saved by faith, Karenin chimed in, showing his approval of her remark by a look. Vous comprenez la gaze. You understand English? Asked Lydia Ivanovna. And having received an affirmative answer, she rose and began looking among the books on a shelf. I want to read Safe and Happy or Under the Wing, she said, with a questioning look at Karenin. And having found the book and sat down again, she opened it. It is quite short. It describes the way to acquire faith and the joy, higher than anything else on earth, with which it fills the soul. A believer cannot be unhappy because he is not alone, but you will see. She was about to begin reading when the footman came in again. Borozdina. Say tomorrow at 2, yes, he went on, keeping her finger in the book to mark the place and sighed. Looking with her beautiful dreamy eyes straight before her, this is how true faith acts. You know Mary Sanina? You have heard of her misfortune. She lost her only child. She was in despair. Well, and what happened? She found this friend, and now she thanks God for her child's death. That is the happiness faith gives. Oh, yes, it is very, began Oblonsky, glad that she was going to read and give him time to get his ideas together. No, evidently it will be better not to ask for anything tonight, he reflected. Only let me get away from here without making a mess of things. It will be dull for you, said the Countess Lydia Ivanovna, turning to Lando, as you don't understand English, but it is quite short. Oh, I shall understand, replied Lando, with the same smile, and closed his eyes. Karenin and Lydia Ivanovna exchanged significant looks, and the reading began. All right, there we go, another chapter down. Religion, my favorite thing. Have your say about this chapter over on the Hemingway List subreddit. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.